Welcome to Write Through the Roof, the podcast for writers who want to improve their craft. I'm Madeline Diest, and in this show, I'm interviewing writers of all different types and asking, what's that one thing that took your writing to the next level? So come and join me and learn all the proven tips, tricks, and techniques to take your writing right through the roof. Hello and welcome to Write Through the Roof. And today I'm speaking with Elizabeth Spann Craig. Hi Elizabeth, how are you going?
Good, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Thanks for sparing the time to talk with me today.
Oh, I'm delighted to be here. Thanks so much for asking me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. A little introduction about Elizabeth. So Elizabeth is a best-selling cozy mystery author of the Southern Quilting series, the Memphis Barbecue Mysteries, and the Myrtle Clover Mysteries. She publishes both traditionally and independently. Her blog was named as one of the 101 best websites for writers by Writer's Digest. And her most recent book in the Myrtle Clover series, Cleaning is Murder, which is an awesome title, I completely understand. Cleaning is Murder is out now. Thanks again for coming on the show.
Thank you so much. I'm excited to be here.
Excellent. So how I like to start off is... it's early in the morning for me, so let's think of this as some kind of warm-ups, some kind of stretches, you know, get yourself limbered up. So some short, sharp questions. So you write cozy mysteries. Now, I could assume that you are a plotter, but are you a plotter or a pantser?
Well, I have been both. So that is a very good question. I had started out as a pantser, and I was just one of those who was like, okay, this is totally organic. I'm just going to make it up as I go along, kind of kumbaya experience. And that worked extremely well for me for about 4 books. And then I had a disaster, and it was when I was writing for Penguin. And I came up like 2 weeks up to deadline, and I realized the book didn't work. I mean, it really didn't work. There was a huge plot hole, and it was a disaster. And so I had to actually get a little extra deadline time, which I hated to do, and I had to go back and figure out how to make it work. And I, after that, I've been just a dedicated outliner. I don't enjoy doing it, but it makes me write much faster, and I don't have those disasters anymore. So I can see both sides, though. I definitely enjoyed making it up as I went along, but I found that obviously I don't think very far. I'm not a chess player, so I need to really outline completely in advance.
So how did you teach yourself to be a plotter?
I know that these books have, and I think most commercial fiction does, it has a particular pattern to it. And I hate to use the word formula because that's such an ugly word, and people will, you know, kind of use that in a condescending way. But there's definitely a pattern to it. In fact, there's such a pattern that I have an outline template that I've shared up to Google Docs for any cozy writer who wants that. And it just helps me to think it through. And it's, you know, you're introducing suspects. You've got a first murder, a second murder. You've got the sleuth usually is in danger. And then you have it nicely wrapped up at the end. You have to if it's a cozy mystery. There's no horrible, tragic endings for cozies because everybody would just be like, oh, my gosh, what happened? You know, that's not the way that works. So I have that set up, and I have my outline ready to go. I fill it in. And then if something, you know, I have a wonderful idea, I'm happy to veer off my outline. And I do that pretty frequently, but it has to be a better idea than I already planned. And sometimes that's the case. And sometimes I just stick to the outline.
Good, good. So do you write every day?
I do. I do write every day. I mean, I would have to be pretty sick or something really huge would have had to have come up. And that doesn't usually happen at 4:30 or 5 o'clock in the morning. So there's no excuse unless I'm really sick. I just found it takes more energy for me to jump back into a project after a break. And I have more continuity errors because I've forgotten what I wrote before. And it ends up being harder than writing every day. I don't have a huge word count every day. I'm usually aiming for like 750 words. But if you do that every day, it adds up pretty fast.
So are your words carefully crafted, or do you just vomit them out for your 750?
It's You know, I would have said I just vomit them out, but I don't do a lot of revision. So I think that my vomit has just become attuned, and it might just be the number of books at this point. It's projectile, but I don't know, 26, 27 books. I was like, it obviously is working. I don't usually have to fix it too much. I mean, I definitely go through and fix, but it's like a day. I mean, maybe a day I spend fixing. And then the editor is like, okay, this, this, and this. And then I spend maybe another day fixing. That's pretty much it.
Oh, wow. I'm in awe.
But it's kind of, I mean, it's almost like muscle memory after a while. Just with, I mean, these particular books, I think if I were trying something new every single time, I think it would be much more work for me. And it certainly felt like it was a lot harder the first few books, no question.
So you mentioned there that you get up, do you get up at 4:30 in the morning and start writing?
Yes, I do. I mean, it's pretty bad. But there's a reason. I will say that sounds insane. But there's a reason. And here, and this is a really crazy thing, but the high school here, the kids who were teenagers, they go to school. The late bell is at 7:15, which is, as you know, for teenagers, that's a ridiculous time to expect teenagers to be learning, whatever. And so they're, you know, my kids are 4 years apart. So I've been in high school for 8 years, which is a long time to be in high school. So I just was like, okay, I'm going to get up an hour before everybody else gets up and it'll be dead quiet and just get my stuff done and make sure I've got my stuff done before everybody, you know, else is up making demands on my day. And considering they would get up anywhere between, 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock, I would get up between 4 and 5 o'clock. And my daughter likes to sleep in a little bit. So now I don't have to get up until like 4:45. So that's awesome.
So do you have a writing fuel of choice to help you at that time of the morning? I can probably guess.
Oh, well, it used to be regular coffee and then my doctor kicked me to decaf. So sadly it's decaf. Oh, I know. It's so sad. But I have enough decaf that I think probably I am getting caffeine because, it has a small amount in there. So if you have several cups of decaf, then you probably are getting a little kick from that.
Take that, doctor.
Yeah. He said decaf and I'm doing it.
He just didn't say 25 cups a day.
Yes, right. He neglected to tell me that. So.
All right, good. So it sounds like we've got to know you a little bit more. So let's get a little more in depth. So how do you describe your writing and what themes do you like to explore?
My writing is, they're old-fashioned puzzle mysteries, sort of like the Agatha Christie of old, where everybody has a motive, everybody has means, they have opportunity. And then you're kind of like an armchair sleuth. You're solving the case. The reader's solving the case alongside the detective. And it's all about the escape for the reader. And with cozies, it's this wonderful little process where you have an idyllic place and then something really bad happens. Somebody's murdered. But it's not, you don't describe it in a lot of detail. It's just that something bad happened. And then order, peace, harmony, it's all restored at the end. And it's a very tidy process. It's very satisfying, I think, for the readers. And I would say as far as themes, my favorite theme is don't discount the elderly. Don't underestimate what seems to be very benign. And I was such an avid reader of Miss Marple back in the day. And I think it really made a huge impact on me. And that's the theme I explore more and more frequently because I do have 3 senior sleuths. So there you go.
Cozy mystery is a really interesting genre because, as you say, it's wrapped up and it's nice and I find them soothing. And yet they're about murder.
Yes. I think you can feel safe when you're reading them because it doesn't come too close to you, except there's that one moment where the sleuth is in danger and the reader, by proxy, because the reader is also the sleuth. And it's a little scary, but it's not scary enough. You can read it at night before you go to sleep and it's not going to give you nightmares all night. I think it just is the fact, like you're at home and you hear a storm going on outside your house and you feel so cozy inside. And I think that's how the term came about. It's a cozy experience because you're reading about something really, really scary and you're safe. And there's something, I guess, cathartic in that.
And it's got that long standing tradition. And yeah, it's interesting how popular it is, especially with, and I don't think any of your books have them, but like the Cozy Cat Mystery and all of those other types.
Yes, I have a feral cat in one of my series.
Really?
Yes, I think I like to buck tradition a little bit. I don't know what's wrong with me, but yes, that series did get dropped by the publisher too. But I love it. You know, it's just fun. It's fun to do things a little differently.
Excellent. So the key question I like to ask everyone is, what do you think is the one thing that's been most helpful in improving your writing?
And this is going to sound a little counterintuitive, but I would say to set the bar very, very low. Because to me, that's
hard. Okay.
But this genuinely is the one thing. And I think that's because, to me anyway, it's better to have a string of successes every day. I mean, every day that you hit your goal, whether it's like whatever your goal is, if it's, you know, two paragraphs, if it's just opening up the Word document and just looking at it, whatever it is, better to do that every single day and feel great about yourself and have this habit than to rack up this tremendous word count and get burned out. I mean, I've been burned out before. Hmm. And, you know, it's just it's a wonderful thing to just, you know, like I said, it's muscle memory. I go downstairs, I get the decaf out and I sit down and it just goes. And it's almost effortless in a way. It just gets to that point where it's not hard. And that way you don't feel like you're behind all the time. And also, you're never behind, and never try to catch up. I mean, if there's a day where you miss or a week that you miss, just jump back in where you were, because I think there's nothing more dispiriting really than saying, okay, I'm ready to write again, but I need to catch up 3,000 words or whatever. Mm-hmm. I mean, it just makes you start out with this horrible feeling. I just think it's best just to jump on in.
Was there a time or an experience where you had to teach yourself this and, you know, not be so hard on yourself?
I think so. I mean, I think a lot of writers are perfectionists, and I'm maybe not a perfectionist, but I'm definitely type A. And I like to feel like I'm in kind of control of my routine. And I mean, I've been doing this for long enough where I had children. My children are old now, but I had them in, you know, they were in elementary school and things, and just stuff happens, you know, or I'd wake up and go downstairs and the dog was sick, you know, or whatever it was. And I think I felt like I was scrambling, especially with an actual deadline, not a self-imposed one. And yeah, you have to be like, okay, this is okay. I'm just going to let this go, and I'm not going to, you know, fret about this. It's going to work out, and it does. You just kind of just keep jumping right back in.
Mm, absolutely. I didn't mention in the intro, but you also have a fantastic curation list of writing tips that you send out every week, which is also a fabulous resource for writers.
I enjoy doing that. I learn a lot from what I read. I have a feed reader called Feedly, and I've got it stocked with, you know, a couple of thousand blogs. And I go through and I curate it and I share tips on Twitter. And then I have a roundup every week on my blog. So it's a good way for me to keep learning as well, because everything changes with writing, with promotion anyway.
Mm. And I really appreciate how you have it structured into, because there's so many of them, but just how they're structured in themes, so I can just run my eye down and go, yep, not for me, that one, that one, that one. Yeah, it just makes it easier to pick and choose, because there's so much out there, isn't there?
There's so much, and that is helpful, and I wish I could claim credit for that. I have a programming friend named Mike Fleming with Hiveword, and he has got it set up so it does it automatically, which is so amazing, because otherwise it would just be this big, and it has been in the past, it's like this big dump of stuff, but this is a lot easier to bring it in, I think.
Mm. Okay, great. So are you seeing you get so many of those tips every week or every day, are you trying anything new at the moment?
I am. I'm trying to actually double up on what I'm doing just production-wise. I'm thinking about trying a new series. I'm thinking about trying a standalone. And I think before, because my kids, I'm not having to do anything with them as much anymore. They're pretty much self-sufficient. I've had to restructure my routine. And I've read a lot of articles lately about how to do that, because not that I'm inflexible, but I was just so used to doing it a particular way. And I'm still doing it, you know, every morning. But it's like, well, I can do this again and try to hit the reset button in the afternoon. So I've been trying to do that. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm just going to do something completely different in the afternoons than the mornings. And that way I don't feel like I'm kind of cross-polluting the one book with the other. Because if I'm working on two books at the same time, it's easy to kind of do that. accidentally. You know, I've had guest appearances from one series to another series that were unintended. And my editor's been like, hold on, what's the name of the sheriff? And I'm like, oh, no, wrong series.
So how do you write one in the morning and edit another one in the afternoon? Is that how you structure it?
No, that would be smart. But no, I'm actually brainstorming both at the same time. It would be better. And I have in the past, I've had it structured where I did edit in the afternoon and then I was creative in the morning. But right now, I don't seem like I'm on that track, which is unfortunate. But I'm also doing a lot more reading this year. I was like, okay, I'm going to try to read a lot more different types of genres and just inform my writing a little bit more. And that seems like it's working out really well. So I've carved out some more time for doing that. I think I've read like 45 books so far this year. Whoa. Genres I wouldn't read. YA, science fiction, fantasy, trying just everything to just see what's out there. And, you know, I just love the word crafting. And for a long time, I felt like it's hard to read and write at the same time. But I was like, no, I've got to do it.
Oh, I have no problem with reading and writing at the same time. I don't know how your brain's coping with writing two different things at the same time. because what I was going to say is not that I always do write two things at the same time, but I always find that actual writing is a lot more tiring than editing.
Yes, it definitely is. There's something almost soothing about editing because you know you're almost done maybe, or at least I am because I edit after I've written a first draft. Mm. It just feels easy compared to creative work, definitely.
Mm, maybe the analytical break.
Mm-hmm, definitely, different side of your brain.
Mm. Okay, so back to your reading. So what writers inspire you and what have you been reading recently that you have really liked?
Well, I think I mentioned Agatha Christie, of course. That was the original inspiration, inspired my general just love of mysteries and of senior sleuths. Just fantastic. Everybody's familiar with her. M.C. Beaton is another author I really admire. And she, in particular, I think, made me want to write cozies. She's an older lady now. She's still going strong. So that's inspiring just alone. And she's written, I think, 35 books in the Hamish Macbeth series and 28 in her Agatha Raisin. I mean, it's just unbelievable. And she keeps them fresh. And, I mean, occasionally she'll have one that's maybe a little off. But her readers are just like, they're getting what they want from the series. They're getting the same characters, but she's able not to recycle the plots and stuff. I mean, she's just done a really good job with that. And Anthony Horowitz, I've been really impressed by him lately. And he's kind of an odd pick maybe. But he's really, I mean, I was like, okay, he started off writing what, YA adventure. I think my son, like probably 7 or 8 years ago, was reading his Alex Rider books. And then he did some screenwriting. And then of course he ended up writing the two of the Sherlock books, House of Silk and Moriarty by the Doyle Estate awarded him the books. And I was just like, I was doubtful, you know. And then this is awesome. And his Magpie Murders and The Word is Murder, those two books, standalones, absolutely wonderful mysteries. So those have been fun lately.
Actually, I was a little bit confused by him because of that. Like the name, I was like, is that the same guy who...
Yes, that's the thing. He's also writing, he wrote like a James Bond book, that whole family actually got him to write one. Yeah, he's all over the place right now, but he seems like he's doing it pretty well. But, you know, I don't know how he's doing it with the branding, but it seems like it's working for him.
Well,
however he does it.
If the Arthur Conan Doyle estate and the other estates are asking you to write books, I think you're okay with your author.
Yeah. Obviously a successful brand there.
Yeah, I think it's probably fine.
Yeah. They're able to find him. It's okay.
Yeah. Okay, so tell me a little bit more about Cleaning is Murder. So what inspired that, and were you trying anything different?
This is interesting. Yes, this was actually a reader suggestion, which I'm always kind of hesitant to say. I mean, it was just kind of bizarre, right? I mean, because I don't know, readers frequently will you know, write writers and say, I have a great idea for you. But my readers, honestly, they do. They do have great ideas. And I was like, oh, you know what? That's great. Because I have my sleuth housekeeper, who's kind of a disaster. Her name is Puddin'. And she always says her back is thrown and she doesn't want a clean house. And Myrtle will come in her house and find her, you know, her housekeeper is sitting on the sofa and watching soap operas and things like that. But my reader was like, you know, I think it'd be great if Puddin was a murder suspect. I was like, that has great humor potential. I like it. And she was right. I mean, she was spot on. That was it was a fun idea. And I wrote that and I was like, this is really cool. And I did try to do something different. A little bit different. I was trying to do something actually I had done really easily before in a much earlier book in the series, and I found it much more difficult to pull off this time. It was just one of those scenes where everybody comes together, and these mysteries frequently have a lot of humor in them. And humor can either be natural or it can be just kind of a disaster. Mm-hmm. And I felt like, okay, it's becoming a disaster, so I had to change it. It didn't go exactly the way I wanted to. And then I was like, you know, but I like the way the scene turned out. You know, it wasn't like it was in the book before, but it was something completely different. And for the most part, from what I can tell with reviews, I think I pulled it off. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when you're like book 13 in, you're trying to keep the reader satisfied, but you are still trying to introduce something kind of different. And it's tricky. It's kind of hard.
Because you don't want to get bored.
No, I don't want to get bored. I don't want them really to get bored. But then I've discovered before, like I've taken my characters on a cruise before, and some of the readers really liked it. And some of them were like, oh, you know, I really wanted her to stay in the little town and, you know, visit with the other characters and stuff. So I guess you can't really please everybody, but we can try.
Oh, I suppose that, yeah, with that long-running series, is you get that hardcore audience who feel they know the characters very well, and, you know, it's almost like you should say to them, maybe you could write some fan fiction.
Right. I know. I mean, my demographic usually would not do something like that, but, I mean, I do feel that way. I feel like they think about it, and it's really cool. I was like, well, that's really neat. It, you know, and this is probably the second or third time that a reader has suggested something, and I was like, that's just a great idea. You know, it's fun.
So going back to that humor, so is this book traditionally published or independently published?
No, I actually ended up taking all of my characters back, except for the Memphis Barbecue. I could not get those back. I was locked down in a contract. Couldn't get those guys. I keep being asked. I do get asked by readers, can I do it? I'm like, oh, I can't. There's no way. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to be able to lawyer up for that one. But I did take my Southern Quilting characters back, got the rights back for that, and for the Myrtle series. So it's interesting. I mean, obviously with a Southern Quilt, I just got my rights back to book one of the Myrtle mystery just recently. And that's been interesting because before, I mean, they all work as standalones, but now I've got the rights to all of them. So I'm trying to kind of figure out how to capitalize a little bit more on that. With Southern Quilting, I won't get the rights back to like ebook or anything like that. There's just no way, but at least I've got the characters and it works out well. I mean, I've enjoyed it. I didn't have a problem being traditionally published at all. I always had good covers. I had great editors. But it's, you know, sometimes you find out you do better off on your own. And that's what I discovered. So I decided to do that.
So going back to the humor side, so you mentioned that you do only very few drafts. So your editor is then your kind of humor gauge? Is that how it works?
Yes. Yeah, she actually really liked this one, Cleaning is Murder. She said, you know, and she always says, oh, it's a good book, but she's really, you know, she's just real short about it. She said, good book, you know, and that's pretty much it. And she was effusive over this one. I was like, she really liked what I was trying to pull off. But then I was like, but, you know, it's so individual. You just never know if it's going to work for everybody else. But humor is neat, I think, when the characters actually spawn it themselves, when you put them in situations that make them uncomfortable, it's kind of funny. And when it comes naturally like that, it's just easy. I think when I think too hard about it, then I get into trouble. Like when I was trying to set up this whole elaborate thing and I'm like, why, that doesn't work, you know?
Cool. Okay. So sounds like you're a busy lady and you've got lots of things on the go. So I'll start to wrap up. So you mentioned you were working on two books at once. So what are you working on at the moment if you want to share with us?
Oh, sure. I am working on a Southern Quilting mystery called On Pins and Needles, where an old acquaintance of the sleuth has recently moved to town and my sleuth might be a suspect. And then I'm working on as yet unnamed project that has possibly an unreliable narrator in it, or possibly not. So we'll just keep everyone guessing on that.
Excellent. So if people want to find out more about you and your work, where's the best place to find you online?
The best place is my website, which is my full name, which is ElizabethSpanCraig.com. And you can find me on Twitter as well. And I'm at Elizabeth S. Craig there.
Oh, and of course, I mispronounced Craig because I know Americans say Craig and I say no, Craig.
Actually, you said it exactly like my mother-in-law. I'm the one who I'm the one who doesn't say it correctly, probably, because she would know.
Has she got a British background?
Well, she's from Virginia, Roanoke, and I think that kind of comes through. There's much more of a British connection there in Charleston. Yeah, Virginia and Charleston, those two places.
Good. All right. Well, thank you so much for your time. It's been really, really fun.
Thank you so much for having me. I've enjoyed it.
For listening to Right Through the Roof. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe or spread the word by writing a review on your listening platform of choice. And if you'd like to get in contact with me, please go to madelinediest.com or madeline_diest on Twitter, no apostrophes. You can find the show notes for this episode on madelinediest.com under the Right Through the Roof tab. And until next time, what are you going to do to improve your writing this week?